Welcome to the Bungie Line again. This is Ted Hager.
And this is Alex Barnett. Did you hear that?
What?
That noise again.
What noise again? What, you mean our intro sound, our didgeridoo?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's a custom sound that we had made. It's actually supposed to make the sound Bungie.
Bungie.
Exactly.
Like that. Ben, can you play it again, please? Oh, yeah.
You kind of get it, right?
That's cool.
Yeah, so that's our intro sound.
Thank you.
Do we have to do this every time?
You got a problem with that?
I don't know. Hey, big news in the industry this week. Apparently, Yahoo has put a bid out there to buy Zimbra.
$350 million.
Yeah. I'm sure if we up the price on them, they won't mind a
bit. I bid for it last night. Yeah,
just raising it on up that way.
But,
I mean, that's pretty huge news right there because, I mean, you look at Yahoo, they've already got Yahoo Mail. And then Zimbra's this collaboration suite, this open source collaboration suite that's been out there. And I don't know, it's kind of an interesting move by Yahoo.
I think it's a business play. I think a lot of what they've been doing has been focused around the consumer. I think that they see opportunities being able to get into the business-to-business market, a little bit on the enterprise side, a little bit how Google have essentially turned consumer-facing products and try to fit them into new markets and
search
see what the opportunities
and stuff
are.
Like that
right,
done.
And I think Zimbra could be a play along those lines. I think there's a number of different interesting aspects, and speaking to Jeremy, hopefully will give us a little more of a clue of what it is that they're planning to do there.
And speaking of a clue, let's clue in our audience to what this week's interview is, because Jeremy, when you refer to him, is Jeremy Zawadny from Yahoo. We decided to give him a call and talk to him about, well, I think you and I originally, when we designed this, Alex, we thought we're going to have a plan. We're going to have some kind of agenda that we're going to go through as we talk to him. And that just, as usual with you and I, fell completely apart. And we talked to him about every topic under the sun, starting with Zimbra, going through Hadoop and going through various things that he's put on his blog lately.
The WebOS conversation.
Yeah, it became such a huge thing. And APIs, of course, web APIs throughout the discussion. We've had to break the interview into two parts.
Two parts, a first part and a second part.
Right, right, which means people have to hear us talk about the Bungie Line signature sound twice for one interview. It's really just part of the kind of torture that we want to do on our listeners.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, Jeremy Zawadny, our interview guest today, is a developer evangelist for Yahoo and evangelizes many of their APIs and things, and is a general man about town in the Yahoo department. So we talked to Jeremy, and let's check out the interview. Jeremy, welcome to the Bungie Line. How are you doing?
Not bad. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well.
Excellent.
So to get things started here, before we dive into any of the many topics, because it seems like there's been a maelstrom of things coming out of Yahoo just lately, why don't you give us an idea of who you are, what kind of things you're involved in, what you do for Yahoo?
Sure. So I've been around Yahoo for a while now, coming up on it'll be 8 years at the end of the year, so I don't know how many lifetimes that is in internet years, but it's been a while. And I work on the Developer Network, which is the group that helps provide all of the APIs and web services and things like that for third-party developers to build on our stuff or build our stuff into anything that they're building. And I've been doing that for, a little over a year now, I guess. And I was actually part of the group that started the Developer Network a few years ago when it was a part of the search business. And so I've also been around doing other things within the company. I've been in the search group a couple times. I used to work in Yahoo Finance, and I've also worked in our platform engineering group as well. So I bounced around a little bit in those 8 years.
So is that group, that's kind of broken away from that part. It sits as its own group inside of Yahoo these days?
The Developer Network does, yeah. We're actually part of our sort of platform division. So the groups that worry more about infrastructure and core technology and things like that. Rather than being attached to a particular product that people use on a daily basis, like web search or something like that.
Okay. And tell us about the growth of the network. I mean, from the first, what were the first APIs that you guys put out, and how did you grow the network?
Well, it started with a couple of search APIs. This is back, 2-3 years ago, and it was really just opening up web search and some of the other search verticals we had. So it was things like web results, images, eventually we added video. We had local pretty soon after, if not right away, so people could get local businesses and things like that. And it kind of grew organically inside the company as groups kind of saw what was happening and thought about opening up and kind of saw the traction we got and the fact that, yes, third-party developers would pick up our stuff and do interesting things with it and find ways to, you know, show us how we could improve our services or find interesting ideas to play with. So, you know, what happened is over the next few years, more and more people got serious about it, and it also became more of a trend in the industry. So, you know, people got on board, and other groups thought about how they could open up their stuff. And sometimes it was just the same technique. It was, hey, we should provide an API for some piece of data we have or some interesting service. And other groups were releasing full-blown software or nowadays even doing things like contributing to, you know, visible open-source projects and things like that. So, you know, what started as this kind of small idea a couple of years ago has actually grown into something that's, you know, got a whole group of dedicated people working on it full-time and has a lot of infrastructure behind it and is, you know, we're expecting to grow quite a bit over the next few years.
Jeremy, this is Alex here. And you guys have been in the news a lot in the last 2 or 3 weeks with somewhat related, but not necessarily clearly related, bits of news, such as the Zimbra acquisition. And that was big news when it happened. It was we were hearing numbers like 350 million. But what's
speaking of visible open source projects, right?
Right.
That's right.
So what's all that about then?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, I don't have any real inside scoop here or anything more that other people have read, but, you know, from my point of view, it's really kind of the, you know, I see it as the next generation of online collaboration tools that that we will now be offering to, you know, hundreds of millions of people potentially. It's not all that different than, you know, a couple of years back when we saw this little company called AdPost that had built a, you know, this really killer mail interface and said, well, gosh, wouldn't it be great if we could actually make that the front end for Yahoo Mail? And suddenly we'd have, you know, hundreds of millions of people that would have this much, you know, this much more interactive, more desktop-like feel to their mail system, you know, that they've been using for several years now in the case of, you know, many of those users. And so you just sort of look and say, well, where's the next step? What should we be doing next? And you know, the Zimbra folks have been doing some incredibly cool stuff with their software. You know, they've got a desktop client, they've got a web client, they've got, you know, there's a server piece as well, and one of the things I've recently learned is that the server piece actually speaks Microsoft's MAPI interface. So I guess it's theoretically possible to have an Outlook client talking to a Zimbra server, so you don't even need Exchange on the back end.
Which is very sexy, and that's calendar as well as mail.
That's right, exactly. And you know, that's not something you see every day, and there's always been this, you know, And again, I don't know what the plans are here, but there's you know, people have joked for years about the sort of Microsoft tax on small businesses and things like that. And it's the fact that everyone seems to have an Exchange server or needs an Exchange server because they want calendaring and messaging and things like that. And, you know, now that may not be the only game in town. You know, the Zimbra guys have got, as I understand, you know, millions or hundreds of thousands of paying customers or whatever the numbers might be, but it's pretty clear that they've got a product out there that people really, really want.
So that's the, you know, and that's looking from an end user acquisition perspective, and then there's the whole kind of developer play around that. What are your thoughts on the potential there?
I think it's pretty interesting. I mean, I just spent a couple of minutes the other day looking at it, and they've got some plug-in support and things like that in the product, which I think is really cool. You know, I don't know what we'll be able to do with that in, you know, until the deal closes and things like that. We probably won't even be talking a lot with them about it, but I suspect that there's going to be a whole new level of potential integration, you know, especially if we can open up APIs so that people can write apps that will interact with the server as well as apps that will run, in some sense, be hosted or running inside the service so that, you know, someone comes along and says, hey, I want to get a mailbox for my company, or I want to set up employees with email, or for my charity, or whatever kind of group it is. And maybe there will just be, you know, looking down the road, you can imagine there even being some, you know, big marketplace of plugins or widgets or add-ins or whatever they're going to be called that people could add into their collaboration tools.
Yeah.
You know, it's taking ideas that have been around on the desktop for a long time and moving them onto the web. You know, one of the reasons that Microsoft Office is as popular as it is not just because it's, you know, a collaboration suite, it's because there were APIs and third-party developers came along and built plugins and add-ins and automated things and did all sorts of things that were really valuable to people, which made their lives easier, but also meant that they were more and more tied to that particular tool.
Yeah, it becomes more of an application platform
exactly.
In that sense.
Yeah. And that's a trend I think we're seeing in many places on the web, or at least beginning to, and it's only going to, I think, accelerate and become more prominent in the next few years.
So that's also interesting in the sense that, you know, if you've got this collaboration offering and you've got solid APIs into it, that I think that's going to go a long way. If you look at a lot of open source projects, one of my frustrations with them is because they're open source, a lot of times the developers are like, well, that is the API to them. You can get at it and you can hack the code itself and you
can
make whatever you need. So it would be really cool to see nice APIs on this. I don't know enough about Zimbra as it stands. What kind of APIs besides MAPI does it have? Do you know if it has any decent interfaces to it?
Right now I don't. I need to spend some time poking around it to see what's there. A lot of what I know is spent, you know, a few minutes on the website and then some internal mailing lists where people have been talking about it. You know, there were some people that got excited about us even using it internally because, like, you know, we're a big company and like every other big company, we have problems trying to figure out what the right internal email system is and calendaring system and things like that. And one of the huge advantages that a web-based system like Zimbra has, of course, is it's cross-platform or mostly cross-platform in the sense that you can run Firefox in just about anything and use it. So people who are sitting in front of a Mac all day or a BSD box or something like that aren't forced necessarily to have a computer in their cube that runs Outlook or something. And, you know, that's clearly going to be interesting to a lot of people. So there's a lot of hope that could bridge some divides there that people have had to fight in the past.
And we're talking about mail APIs, I guess. And what of the Yahoo Mail API news that broke, I think, about three or four months ago with the experiment that you were doing around not just the API exposure, but around the business model and the kind of activity that you're seeing there?
Yeah, I mean, that's been, you know, there's been a sort of steady stream of activity as far as building apps and questions coming up on using the API in our support groups and things like that. So there's a lot of, you know, as from my point of view, there's a lot of work going on out there, and people are trying it out to see what they can build on it, and what the capabilities are, and things like that. I don't have a list handy of apps that have been built or submitted. I could poke around our gallery on gallery.yahoo.com and see what people have submitted.
Tell us about the API maybe a little bit, though. Like, what kind of things did you guys open up on it?
It's interesting. The way that the service has been architected, even internally, is such that the front end and back end are fairly separate. So the back end is all about, you know, message storage and making sure mail has been delivered properly and put in the right place and all that kind of stuff, and searchable and all that, saving drafts. And then the front end, you know, does all the fancy JavaScript and makes things look like a desktop app and things like that. But so what the API primarily does is it is, for the most part, almost the same API that our own front end talks to on the back end in order to make requests, like get a message, send a message, move a message to a folder, delete a message, things like that. So you can do things like manipulate mailboxes, download messages, create messages, and all the sorts of things that the user interface lets you do when you're sitting in front of a keyboard and mouse, and you know, search and things like that. So
the API is actually complete enough that somebody could theoretically recreate the entire mail interface.
That's right. I mean, and they could. I mean, they could decide, you know, hey, I want to make a mail interface that's optimized for users who have text-only web browsers or have, you know, speech synthesizers because they can't see very well or have, you know, who knows? I mean, there are all sorts of permutations you can imagine. They may want to build a custom version that works really well on a particular phone, whether it's an iPhone or a BlackBerry or, you know, whatever it might be. And, you know, there are lots of solutions out there for things like that already, but the idea with the open API is, of course, anyone who has an itch can go ahead and try to scratch it, and if they build something interesting, then other people might want to use it too.
So this is a little bit fascinating to me because I've had a Yahoo account for a long time for mail, and for the longest time, it was completely frustrating to me that I couldn't even get POP access to it.
Right, right, right.
And now you've gone all the way to the other side where you can get rich API out of it. What flipped the bit on that?
For us, it's interesting because one of the first APIs we put on a consumer service that has both a free and a premium offering. So we still have the free Yahoo Mail accounts that people have already had, but we also have premium Yahoo Mail accounts where you get additional storage and other features. And there are certain API calls that you either cannot use or you only get partial results from if the mailbox that you're interacting with is a free mailbox versus a paid mailbox as well. So the API isn't simply a sort of gateway to get around the lack of POP app access. But if you have a premium account, of course, you could write your own POP server or write your own tools for manipulating and filtering messages and all those sorts of things.
So it's limited. The API is actually limited unless you have the premium account?
Effectively, the API is the same everywhere. It's a question of whether the mailbox you're accessing is a premium mailbox or a free mailbox.
Oh, I got it. So what features are actually available to you through the API or what, or mm-hmm. what's constrained? The API is complete either way. It's just you may not have all the data that's there on the premium. Got
it. Kind of like a telephone, right? You can plug any telephone into the phone jack, but if the services on that line don't include caller ID and call waiting, the phone's not going to be able to use them, right? So the same sort of idea there is in a sense, we're kind of providing that as a utility, and everyone who's using it has to have an account of some sort. It's either a free account or a paid account, and that's going to dictate the services that the API will actually provide to them.
Yeah, and there's this balance between openness in spite of your business model mm-hmm. or in support of your business model and how far you go in that respect.
That's right. And there is an incentive system in place here as well. There's a sort of affiliate program in place so that if a developer builds a really interesting app and thinks that people will be willing to pay for it, they can go ahead and advertise it that way. And for every user that they convert to, you know, a Yahoo Mail premium user, you know, someone who actually turns around and pays Yahoo, that user then gets back some money as well. So there's a way for a developer to – two ways for a developer to make money. One is to sort of sell access to their app, which there's an ongoing revenue stream, and then there's the initial payment they get for converting users from a free to a premium user on Yahoo Mail.
So you're going for a little bit of like that niche application viral kind of component there, get people doing the evangelization for you.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's one of the things, you know, honestly, the Yahoo Mail API is pretty big in the sense that a lot of API calls you can make compared to some of the simple mashups that people might do with a map or Flickr images or something like that. This is closer on the spectrum to being a sort of business and productivity tool. So we think that there's a real possibility there that people are going to build workflow apps or interesting things that might be of use to a larger segment of people that are willing to pay for services that they think are going to be valuable. Right? There's some developers that do things in their free time, just screwing around, showing off to their friends, saying, hey, this is kind of cool. But there's a whole, you know, there's a whole group of professional developers out there who are really good at finding needs that are sort of under Yahoo's radar or under someone else's radar and saying, well, I can build something that does that, and I might be able to make a few bucks off it.
I believe Alex and I are in the former category, not so much the latter category.
And this, I think, takes us to another topic that we want to cover with you, uh-huh. Jeremy, around the fruits of openness
right.
and the fruits of your open hack days.
Yeah, you made a distinction in your blog recently about the difference between open source, where somebody had actually thought that you had open sourced some product or some feature, whereas you guys had really actually opened up APIs, made open APIs.
Mm-hmm.
What is that, the Balmerian distinction there?
Well, yeah, there was an article in Business Week about openness at Yahoo, and this is a problem I've seen in the press repeatedly, which is that they get their terminology confused. And they'll say something like, you know, last year Yahoo released the source code Yahoo Mail. It's like, well, that's not exactly what we did. I mean, they kind of have the right idea. We made it possible for developers to do something with Yahoo Mail. It wasn't by giving away the source code. It was by opening up an API for Yahoo Mail. You know, that was the sort of real specific correction I had for that article. But the larger problem I saw, and I've seen this in several places, is that that article is kind of missing the point in the sense that openness is a much bigger topic than whether or not we plan to, you know, create apps that will run on Yahoo the way that Facebook and other folks have done. You know, in my mind, openness is about providing APIs and data feeds and services like we've been doing for 3 years. Openness is about going to conferences and telling people how we do things. It's about creating tools and contributing to open source projects so that other people can benefit from our work and our expertise and things like that. And, you know, there's a lot that goes into what I think of as openness, and it's not just this narrow view of will Yahoo let third-party developers put stuff on their pages so that users can interact with them. And the reality is, even in that limited sense, you know, we've had MyYahoo able to consume third-party content for a couple of years now when we opened it up to any RSS feed in the world. Mm. And that was kind of a big leap at the time because, you know, no one had really gone and made that leap and said, we're going to do this. So we tried that out, and of course, it made Yahoo more popular, and people were more active on it. And, you know, a lot of positive things happened as a result of that. And it was one of many, I think, experiments we've tried or bets we've made that paid off and, you know, let us continue down that road. And
an open hack day recently, you had a essentially a new product, a new offering that has emerged out of that effort directly. Is that right?
There's a distinction to make here. One is sort of our open hack day is, well, the first one was where we held in Sunnyvale over the course of a couple of days and invited, 500 people from around the country to come and hack on things.
Like what kind of things did you invite them in to hack on?
They could use any of our public APIs and software, everything from the Yahoo User Interface Library, YUI, to the search APIs, to Flickr, to Upcoming, to Delicious, whatever they wanted, to build something cool. And there were some prizes, so the idea was you build something cool and impress us, you might win a prize and that kind of thing. But it was really just to kind of see what sorts of things people would build and get them a chance to meet some of the developers behind the scenes at Yahoo and really get a sense for what developers want from us. And it was very successful in sort of all those ways. What I think you're referring to is there were a couple things that got released very recently, back about a week ago, that were product ideas that came out of our internal hack days.
Okay.
So we have hack days inside Yahoo roughly once a quarter where, every engineer can basically just take the day and build something. Well, not just engineers, product managers and, designers and all sorts of people get in on
right.
that. And we get, 100, 200. We get lots of hacks every quarter that come out of this. And some of them are interesting enough or compelling enough where, the executives who are kind of there to be judges and the other folks kind of look at it and go, ship this, go build it.
Mm-hmm.
And so two of the ones that were popular at a recent hack day ended up getting productized. He actually built out and put on infrastructure that could handle, lots and lots of people using them. And they're out there for the world to see now. One of them I honestly haven't used much, but just by the name I can tell what it is. It's called Shop by Color. And it's a tool for people using Yahoo Shopping to literally limit searches for things based on the color rather than, so you're looking for, looking for a dress or pants or a shirt or whatever, you can do it by color rather than scrolling through lots and lots of pictures.
Now, are we talking about guy colors or chick colors in a case like this? I mean, are we talking about yellow, red, blue, or are we talking about taupe and mauve and chartreuse and those kind of things?
It's actually, it's a color palette, a color chooser that comes up on screen, so the name of the color doesn't matter as long as you can visually identify it.
Whew, thank goodness for that.
Yeah, because I don't understand half those color names anyway.
Yeah, well, Ted's from California, so I think
that's
where he's coming from.
The other thing that came out, which was really cool, and I got to we got to play with the beta version of this internally before it came out, something called Map Mixer. And the idea is that, we've got Yahoo Maps, and you can zoom in and out on cities and see satellites and get real-time traffic and multi-point routing and all that fancy stuff that you want from maps. But every once in a while, you end up in a gray area in the map, and it'll say something like Stanford University or, Center for the Performing Arts or whatever. And you end up in a place where there are other maps online for. You may even have a map of your own. And it's like, wow, wouldn't it be great if I could drop a map in there that will supplement the existing maps that are available?
It's superimposing.
Exactly. I'd like to do it for like a big airport or something because I'm into flying. It's like, hey, I overflew that airport and took a picture. I can drop that on the map. And so the idea is you can find an area on a map, upload an image, and then you see the image superimposed on the map, and you can get to the right zoom level, and you can anchor the corners and twist your image to the point that actually matches the perspective of the map. And then you can save that, and it goes into a gallery so other people can see it, and you can tell your friends about it. And now you've got the ability to search it, of course, as well. So you have a whole other sort of way for people to contribute to online maps without having to know anything about geo-coordinates or cartography or anything like that. They just find, JPEGs off of a campus website of building maps or a picture you took or something like that and drop it on a map.
Interesting. So that actually segues into something that's kind of a head-scratcher for me. I was recently writing a tutorial and actually used your guys' geo-coordinates API.
Geocoder?
Yeah, the Geocoder API. Mm-hmm. Thank you. So I used that API and brought it in and things, and I started thinking to myself, Yahoo's got a lot of different APIs and things. Could you give us maybe a real quick, what are some of the most popular APIs? This triggered in my head just because you were mentioning mapping, and I know that you've got you guys have mapping APIs, but there's also, there's some really popular other mapping things out there. Tell us what some of your most popular things are. What do people come to Yahoo for in your APIs?
There's honestly, and this sounds like a cop out, but it's not. But there's such a diversity of things there that it's almost hard to tell because, in a lot of cases, you're comparing apples and oranges. Some of the things we offer under the umbrella of the developer network are just straight APIs, like the Geocoder. Passes a piece of data, we process it, send you back a result.
Which, by the way, I want to say thank you on that API, in that you guys require no key or anything for that API.
Yeah, it's great. It's just drop in and use it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Dead simple. Really like that API.
And that's one thing we've tried to do with most of our APIs is just we aim for sort of simplicity and you know, trying to require the least amount of effort up front because we want people to be able to get results right away and not spend time screwing around with configuration and reading all the docs and everything.
Or waiting a couple weeks for a key that allows you to use the API, which
exactly.
is a huge frustration.
That's right. You know, some of the things that are really popular are pure utility functions like the geocoder. I mean, the geocoder is very popular because it's a common need. I've got an address and I need to figure out lat long coordinates to put it on a map or something. So that's really popular. And then there are the sort of the visual things. The ones that fall into that category, in my mind, are things like Flickr, because you see Flickr in like half the mashups on the planet. So those are always popular because everyone loves photos. And then maps, of course, also. Everyone wants to embed a map or overlay some interesting data on a map or draw lines on a map. You know, you have people building these running map sites that use Yahoo Maps so you can share maps of where you go running or jogging or biking or whatnot. So you see a lot of things like that. And then in the downloadable software world, there's the Yahoo User Interface Library called YUI, which is just ridiculously popular in the web development community because it solves a whole bunch of problems that web developers have when they're trying to build interactive apps that work cross-browser. You know, they need to work in mm-hmm. Firefox and IE and Safari, and that's not an easy problem to solve for a lot of people. So mm-hmm. YUI comes out there, and it's like, hey, take our code, BSD license, do whatever you want with it. You know, there are screencasts there. There's great documentation and presentations, and people just love it, you know?
I've got to say, I've got to congratulate you guys on the whole YDN experience that you provide. Your documentation overall is great, and overall, I'd say your community outreach work with your evangelists and the content that you have is fantastic. What would you say is underutilized in the sense that...
It's too cool.
I mean, if people knew about it, they'd use it more.
Oh, that's easy. I think that is the AJAX API for maps, because the reality is we offer both Flash and AJAX APIs for Yahoo Maps. And the fact that the consumer version of Yahoo Maps is Flash-based, at least in the U.S. it is, I don't want to say misleads developers, but they assume that's all we offer on the developer side, so they don't even come and look to realize that we have both Flash and AJAX interfaces for maps, because the reality is a lot of people don't want to deal with Flash when they're developing web apps. They want the AJAX interface for whatever reason. Either they've got a bias against Flash, they don't want it, you know, there's the perception that it's going to slow down the website, or it's a third-party plugin, and, you know, even though practically everyone in the world has Flash, I think that's the most underutilized thing, because when it comes up, when we're at, you know, at the conferences, you know, meet people at the booth, or just talking to people casually, and they talk about maps, they're like, well, yeah, it'd be great if you guys had AJAX interface to your maps. Like, well, we do. It's been there since pretty much day one. Go have a look at it, and we, you know, you get the stunned look on their face. It's like, oh my God, yeah, you didn't know about that. And then they go look at it and email you a week later, and they're like, hey, your AJAX API is great. This is saving me so much time. It makes everything so much easier and whatnot. So that's probably the one that's the most sort of underutilized or underappreciated or underrealized, I think, because it's a good interface. I know the guys who designed it, and it's something that so many people want and just don't realize is there.
This podcast has been broken into multiple parts to make the download go faster. Well, okay, so we've gotten so far with Jeremy that he's talked a little bit about some of the APIs and stuff. We're going to be back next week with part two of this interview. And, you know, now that I've mentioned audiobooks, though, Alex, I got one little last thought as we're heading out on this episode.
Mm.
Just this week, another cool thing was announced, and most people probably didn't catch it, but, you know, I come from the Linux side of the world. I've dealt with open source, free software, and that kind of stuff. eMusic.com actually introduced this week that they're going to be offering audiobooks in MP3 format. That is, no DRM format. Now, yeah, there's still going to be the people that say MP3, it's a proprietary format.
Blah, blah, encoder, blah.
Yeah, all that. But it's a non-DRM playback. It'll play back on any MP3
Very nice.
Player. And that just happened. So
it's about time.
Yeah. I encourage people to go out there. If you're an audiobook person or you've been thinking about getting into audiobooks and you've heard about DRM in iTunes or in Audible.com, check out eMusic. They've just gotten a whole good library of different books out there, and you can now get your books from there. Will MP3s play on your Zune? Because you have a Zune, right?
Yes.
So you're like the guy in Utah with a Zune. Will they actually play on there?
Oh, yeah.
You don't have to have a Microsoft format or anything like that?
No.
Cool.
It'll play MP3. It'll play, obviously, the whatevers. It'll play DRMless, and I have plenty of that.
Okay, then. Well, we'll see you guys all next week for part two of the Jeremy Zawadny interview. Also, if you want, you can leave us comments on the blog post that we use for hosting this podcast. You just go to bungeelabs.wordpress.com, and you'll find each episode there. It's actually in its own feed. So check it out. Thanks very much.